Okay, I'd like to thank Cotton Incorporated and the Georgia Cotton Commission for helping to fund this project. As Charlie mentioned, and as we all know, you know, precision agriculture is really designed to try to maximize economic return. It's a way of trying to refine things in order to achieve that goal. And when we're talking about precision agriculture and nematode management, what we really end up talking about for the most part is more effective targeting of nematicide applications, because a lot of the other things we would do for nematode management would really end up being applied to an entire field rather than specific parts of a field. And one thing that we can try and do to more effectively target nematicide applications is to increase our precision in nematode sampling. The idea being you try and find out where in the field nematode pressure is high, where it's low, and you target your management appropriately. And with nematode management zones, the idea is that areas with similar physical characteristics, meaning soil texture, slope, elevation, etc., are more likely to have similar nematode levels and suffer similar levels of damage than areas that have different characteristics. So management zones really are just designed to minimize variability within a zone and maximize the differences among the zones. Now the idea is once you've done that, you're still going to have to sample those zones to find out what's actually there. You're just trying to group or draw boundaries in the field so that you can better target where the pressure is likely to be high, where it's likely to be low, etc. Now, when GPS first became widely available for use in agriculture, one of the first approaches was what's become known as grid sampling, where you just draw a grid in the field and you go out and you collect your samples from each of the cells in that grid. And it's a pretty good way of telling you a lot of information about where nematode pressure is high, where it's low, etc. The problem is it's not very practical because it's very costly, it takes a lot of time and a lot of labor. It's not that it doesn't work, it's just that it's not very practical. And as Charlie mentioned, one of the methods that's really allowed us to sort of get around that problem is the development of rigs such as the Veris rig that allow us to collect soil EC data, electrical conductivity data, because it's fast and easy and cheap, and it's very well correlated with soil texture. So you end up with a very good map of where soils are sandier or heavier in that field. And of course, nematologists have known for a long time that soil texture can have an effect on nematode population levels. Certainly, soil texture can also have an effect on plant growth, etc. Well, because root knot nematodes are often more widespread than reniform nematodes, most of the work in precision agriculture up to now has really been done mostly with root knot nematodes. And in Georgia, just as an example, this is what we can end up with when we draw these nematode management zones based on soil physical characteristics like soil EC, elevation, etc. It's been reasonably effective with root knot nematodes, with soil EC really being the primary driving force in drawing these maps. And there's software available that we use that draws these maps for us. It basically takes the variables we want to use and groups them to minimize the variability within a zone and maximize the variability among the zones. So what we wanted to do was to try and find out if what we had been doing with root knot nematodes that seemed to work would transfer and work reasonably well also for reniform nematodes. So our specific objectives were to evaluate the effect of field physical characteristics on reniform nematode population levels and the yield reduction that they cause in cotton, and to evaluate the influence of field physical characteristics on the effect of nematicides in a reniform infested cotton field. Now, this is a picture of the field that we ended up using.
Is there a laser pointer? No?
The mouse. You're supposed to use the mouse.
Oh, okay. We ended up using this area of the field for this study. It ended up being about a 40-acre section of the field. Oops, excuse me. If you look right in here, you see this field road. Just use that as a landmark on this next slide. You can see that running through here as well to sort of orient you. This map shows what we got when we collected the soil EC data and combined it with our other factors and drew our management maps. And we came up with three zones that we thought were sufficiently unique that we could use them as management zones just to test the theories and see if the way we were doing this was going to have any meaning for reniform nematodes. So we have three zones, zones 1, 2, and 3. Well, within each one of those zones, we also put out randomized and replicated nematicide plots to address the second objective that we had. The way that we did that was we put out the nematicides in 8-row strips that went through the zones, and those nematicide treatments were repeated through the zones. And then we went in and we randomly picked 5 50-foot sections from the middle 4 rows of those plots, of those strips, to assign those to be the plots that we would collect all of our data from. And for the rest of this presentation, all of the data that I'm showing is from those 50-foot sections where we collected the data, not from the zone overall. The 5 nematicide treatments we used are listed here. The entire field was planted with cruiser-treated seed to minimize thrips damage. We also had 2 rates of Timic and 2 rates of Telone plus Timic. Looking at soil EC, and this would be averaged across all of the nematicide treatment plots within a zone, we found that zones 1 and 2 had very similar levels or readings for soil EC, so they had very similar soil texture. Zone 3 had significantly sandier soil. Now, within a management zone, EC did not differ among the nematicide-treated plots, which means that we've done a decent job of picking areas for our study where the EC was uniform within the zone, certainly within the plots that we randomly picked. And there was no interaction between management zone and nematicide treatment plots in this study. I neglected to mention that the 3 zones that we picked for purposes of this study, we were treating them as independent sites for the way we were analyzing the data. So looking at reniform nematode counts, on May 9th, which was a few days before planting, this would be averaged across all of the nematicide plots within that zone. Reniform counts were very, very similar, statistically the same, between zones 1 and 3, and the counts were greatly reduced in zone 2. On September 4th, which is not at the very end of the season, but getting fairly late in the season, the counts in zones 1 and 2 had basically doubled from where they started pre-plant, and the counts in zone 3 were essentially unchanged from where they had started the season. Now, trying to come up with some reasons why that may have happened, zone 2 had a higher elevation than the other 2 zones, and so it drained faster and stayed a little bit drier. Even though this was an irrigated field, you know, it's not getting irrigated all the time, so there are periods where those plots are going to dry out a little bit more. So it may be that that soil moisture had an effect on nematode populations there. Remember that zone 1 and 2 had similar soil textures. Now zone 3, which had much sandier soil than zones 1 or 2, is where the populations didn't really change through the season. They stayed pretty steady all year long. And it may be that that those plots were sandy enough that that had a significant effect on reniform nematodes. Unlike root knot nematodes, reniform nematodes do like a little bit heavier soil, and you can have soils that are sandy enough that they really don't do very well in it. And it may be that zone 3 was getting into that range. Now, if we break out the nematode counts by nematicide treatment, now I'm not going to show you all the data, but immediately before planting, the telone had gone out already, so those plots had reduced nematode levels. We had not yet planted, so the Timic had not actually been applied at this point. So the cruiser-treated and the 2 Timic-treated plots, basically at this point, were all untreated. And you can see statistically they were all similar, which is actually good. It's showing that our plot started at similar levels. Now, there was no nematicide by zone interaction on the first two sampling dates, which would be at planting and then the 9th of July, basically the first half of the growing season, meaning that our nematicides were having the same effect in all three of the zones. Now, there was an interaction on September 4th, but it was really due to differences in magnitude because zone 1 had much higher nematode counts. The differences between nematicide treatments in zone 1 was numerically much larger, and that showed up as a statistical interaction in the analysis. But the basic pattern of the effect the nematicides was having was the same. Now, if we look at yield, I was very surprised to find that averaged across all of the nematicide treatments, yield actually was the same in all three of the zones. I thought zone 2 was going to have significantly lower yield, but it was not. In fact, numerically, it was only a very small bit lower. But there were, of course, differences among the nematicide treatments in each of the zones. But there was no zone by nematicide interaction. So whatever beneficial effect the nematicides were having, it was similar among the three zones. So that was part of what we had set out to find out in the first place. Now, if we break out yield by nematicide treatment, you get about what you would expect, that the lowest yields came from the untreated plots, the cruiser-treated plots. The highest yields came where we had telone in the mix, and the plots that received only Timoc were somewhere in between. Now, we only had 5 replications of each treatment in each zone, which may be why we were not able to statistically separate out some of the means that were not very far apart. If we'd had more replications, we might have had greater separation of the means. But the important point here was that there was no nematicide by zone interaction. That was the thing we really wanted to know at the end of the day. Now, the fumigation, the two plots that received telone, increased yield compared to the untreated control plot by 17% in zone 1, 9% in zone 2, and 14% in zone 3. And that increase due to fumigation was generally related to nematode levels in the non-fumigated plots during the first half of the season. Remember, zone 2 had lower nematode counts. Well, that was where fumigation gave us our least increase in yield. Still increased yield, but less numerically at least than in the other zones. Soil moisture may have had a significant effect on nematode population levels. Now, that was something that was brought out in one of the presentations earlier in this session, where they said rainfall significantly affected the populations they were finding. We may have seen the same thing, that in zone 2, where it was a little drier, we consistently had lower nematode counts. The effects of nematicide treatments was not influenced by the range of soil textures that we had in this field. And finally, we believe that defining nematode management zones based on the field physical characteristics may be pretty useful for reniform nematodes, though the utility is likely to increase as the range of soil textures and elevations in the fields increases. And with that, I'll conclude. If you have time for just a question or so. Yes, Bob.
Did the formulas you all used for calculating management zones for the reniform, was it the same formula that you used for the Nina-Calvin used? Is there the possibility of weighting factors differently in the future for reniform?
Yes, we used the same procedure, the same software, management zone analyst that we used in the root knot project. We did it exactly the same way. At this point, we don't see any real need to change that because all you're doing is grouping, drawing areas in the field that are physically similar to each other. And that process shouldn't really change regardless of what you're talking about. Yes, there is some subjectivity in it. So there is an opportunity to change that if we see a need to do that. And I neglected to mention this field's been in cotton for decades and has been infested with reniform nematodes probably for at least 20 years, if not longer. So there's been ample time for the nematodes to spread and sort of equilibrate in the field at some natural level.
We'll go ahead and stop now then, and any more questions you might talk to them during break, and we'll convene back here at 4 o'clock. Thank you.